And this obsession, moreover, interweaves notions of perfection, this obsession with progress, interweaves notions of perfection, classification, ranking, and social engineering. It is an obsession, we will be arguing, sprung from the totalitarian, platonic obsession with designing the perfect, quote unquote, human, and designing the perfect, quote unquote, state. There was, in response to the statesman's dilemma discussed by Hirschman in his book, The Passions and the Interests, of the ineffectuality of reason for reining in the bloodletting of the rulers, a gradually building reconsideration of the guidance provided by Plato, to understand the substance of which no one better to assist than Karl Popper. And that is an understatement. Quote, if, says Karl Popper, as I believe, the philosophies of Plato, as well as Heraclitus, sprang from their social experience, especially from the experience of class war and from the abject feeling that their social world was going to pieces, then we can understand why the theory of forms came to play such an important part in Plato's philosophy when he found that it was capable of explaining the trend toward degeneration. He must have welcomed it as the solution of a most mystifying riddle. While Heraclitus had been unable to pass a direct ethical condemnation upon the trend of the political development, Plato found in his theory of forms the theoretical basis for a pessimistic judgment in Hesiod's vein. But Plato's greatness as a sociologist does not lie in his general and abstract speculations about the law of social decay. It lies rather in the wealth and detail of his observations, and in the amazing acuteness of his sociological intuition. He saw things which had not been seen before him, and which were rediscovered only in our own time. As an example, I may mention his theory of the primitive beginnings of society, of tribal patriarchy, and in general, his attempt to outline the typical periods in the development of social life. Another example is Plato's sociological and economic historicism, his emphasis upon the economic background of the political life and the historical development, a theory revived by Marx under the name historical materialism. A third example is Plato's most interesting law of political revolutions, according to which all revolutions presuppose a disunited ruling class, or elite, a law which forms the basis of his analysis of the means of arresting political change and creating a social equilibrium, and which has been recently rediscovered by the theoreticians of totalitarianism, especially by Pareto. According to Plato, internal strife, class war, fomented by self-interest and especially material or economic self-interest, is the main force of social dynamics. The Marxian formula, the history of all hitherto existing societies, is a history of class struggle, unquote, fits Plato's historicism nearly as well as that of Marx. And that's from Karl Popper. It's worth considering, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato, it's worth considering that Marx shares with Bentham another quality, in addition to their fondness for a benevolent utilitarianism, which we discussed in our last show, that being a reluctance to give credit to Plato. Let's read a bit more from Karl Popper, The Open Society and Its Enemies, Volume 1, The Spell of Plato. Quote, I believe that he made a serious attempt to reconstruct the ancient tribal forms of social life as well as he could. There's no reason to doubt this, especially since the attempt was in a good number of its details very successful. It could hardly be otherwise, since Plato arrived at his picture by an idealized description of the ancient tribal aristocracies of Crete and Sparta. With his acute sociological intuition, he had seen that these forms were not only old, but petrified, arrested, that they were relics of a still older form. And he concluded that this still older form had been even more stable, more securely arrested. this very ancient and accordingly very good and very stable state, he tried to reconstruct in such a way as to make clear how it had been kept free from disunion, how class war had been avoided, and how the influence of economic interests had been reduced to a minimum and kept well under control. These are the main problems of Plato's reconstruction of the best state. How does Plato solve the problem of avoiding class war? Had he been a progressivist, he might have hit on the idea of a classless, equalitarian society, for as we can see, for instance, from his own parody of Athenian democracy, there were strong equalitarian tendencies at work in Athens. But he was not out to construct a state that might come, but a state that had been the father of the Spartan state, which was certainly not a classless society. It was a slave state. And accordingly, Plato's best state is based on the most rigid class distinctions. It is a caste state. The problem of avoiding class war is solved not by abolishing classes, but by giving the ruling class a superiority which cannot be challenged. As in Sparta, the ruling class alone is allowed to carry arms. It alone has any political or other rights. It alone receives education, i.e. a specialized training in the art of keeping down its human sheep or its human cattle. In fact, its overwhelming superiority disturbs Plato a little. He fears that its members may worry the sheep instead of merely shearing them and act as wolves rather than dogs. This problem is considered later in the chapter. As long as the ruling class is united, there can be no challenge to their authority, and consequently, no class war. Plato distinguishes three classes in his best state: the guardians, their armed auxiliaries or warriors, and the working class. But actually, there are only two castes: the military caste, the armed and educated rulers, and the unarmed and uneducated ruled, the human sheep. For the guardians are no separate caste, but merely old and wise warriors who have been promoted from the ranks of the auxiliaries. That Plato divides his ruling caste into two classes, the guardians and the auxiliaries, without elaborating similar subdivisions within the working class, is largely due to the fact that he's interested only in the rulers. The workers, tradesmen, etc., do not interest him at all. They are only human cattle whose social function is to provide for the material needs of the ruling class. And my comment, any doubt from the above that Plato's tribesmen are salivating at seeing in this moment how close they are to realizing this vision? Continuing, since the ruling class alone has political power, and my comment, for instance, can we dismiss, finally, can we now, such ruses as participatory budgeting from our thinking, refuse to be played at this stage in the advancement of their statecraft, quote unquote? Can we recall that power is global, and so therefore must our resistance be to it? And rather than be used, choose for ourselves our own future, in which each individual one of us lives their gifts and shares them without coercion, without managers deciding for us what world we want. Continuing with Karl Popper, since the ruling class alone has political power, including the power of keeping the number of the human cattle within such limits as to prevent them from becoming a danger, and I have to say, an interjection here, we don't have to imagine their tactics in this regard. Our whistleblower at DARPA has already said they know how to weaponize the energy in the environment, create earthquakes and hurricanes and such. Let's not wait for hearings in Congress before waking up, please. Continuing, the whole problem of preserving the state is reduced to that of preserving the internal unity of the master class. How is this unity of the rulers preserved? By training and other psychological influences. See Alice Miller's For Your Own Good, which we will shortly. but otherwise mainly by the elimination of economic interests, which may lead to disunion. And we are fast approaching that day, the elimination of any economic conflict. We're already there. Pardon me. We'll discuss that shortly in a future show. Okay, where were we? How is this attained? Chiefly by the elimination of economic interests, which may lead to disunion. This economic abstinence is achieved and controlled by the introduction of communism, i.e. by the abolition of private property. This communism is confined to the ruling class, which alone must be kept free from disunion. Quarrels among the ruled are not worthy of consideration. Since all property is common property, there must also be a common ownership of women and children. Only a communist system, which has room neither for great want nor great wealth, can reduce economic interests to a minimum and guarantee the unity of the ruling class. In order that the ruling class may feel really united, that it should feel like one tribe, like one big family, pressure from without, that would be us, we the people, from without the class is as necessary as are the ties between the members of the class. This pressure can be secured by emphasizing and widening the gulf between the rulers and the ruled. The stronger the feeling that the ruled are a different and an altogether inferior race, the stronger will be the sense of unity among the rulers. Unquote from The Open Society and Its Enemies, The Spell of Plato. So do we see, we as a generality must determine ourselves to be fully determining, fully developing individualities as a two-sided political strategy for getting free, as the true power and beauty that we show ourselves to be robs power of our use for its totalitarian machine and forces power's children to rethink their conditioning. Together, both sides stem the tide of the functionaries, that key strategy we've been emphasizing. One of the key strategies we've been emphasizing. And I apologize for going long. And I apologize for once again not getting to our 18th Brumaire reading. But I think apprehending the broader context is needed to fully apprehend Marx's analysis. Marxism has so captured the time, energy, and resources of we on the left, that it's really important that we take the time to think it through, as claiming those resources, that energy, for what I think are more useful strategies, is what we want to do. We got the numbers, 7 billion. We got the critical mass. Once we discuss it and get conscious and certain, we got the technology. Thank you, Nicola, called the internet and instantaneous communication. We have everything we need to call the question and choose freedom. May it be soon. Thank you so much for hanging in there with me. I know I went long. I love you guys so much. And I want to love you in person. Until next week, peace.
to undo, do you know yet?